This episode of Retronauts is brought to you by ExpressVPN and MySheets Rock.
This week on Retronauts, do you got games on your phone? Well, get them out of there. Game preservation is king. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Retronauts. I am your host for this week, Nadia Oxford of the Axe of the Blood God RPG podcast. If you are all hot and heavy about game preservation like I am, oh, do we have a great show for you today. It is all about the fascinating gaming ecosystem of Japanese feature phones, which are currently in danger of going extinct. And preservationists are working very hard to keep that from happening, to keep those games on feature phones preserved. And that is why I have two such preservationists here today. One is Cosmo. Go ahead and say hi to us, Cosmo.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you. And our second guest is Naoya. Go ahead and say hi.
Hi, my name is Naoya Shinoda.
Cool. And basically, I think all three of us have a really deep history with Rockman. Like, of course, I've been a fan since I was a young girl. I've written or helped write the Mega Man X Maverick Hunter Field Guide and Mega Man Robot Master Field Guide. And, you know, I've been through the fandom since 1995. I'm kind of poisoned. But what was your entry into the Mega Man fandom? And Rockman, Cosmo, go ahead and start telling us about what got you into the Blue Boy.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing where I wasn't really like a big Mega Man person when I was like a kid. Like I was actually more of a Mario guy.
Yeah,
I was very much, you know, deep into the Nintendo platformers. I would usually play ton of Mario, like RPGs kind of scared me, you know, just, I guess just like the pure simplicity of Mario, you know, jumping and, you know, jumping on things, getting to the end of the level. That was very simple to me. So basically Mega Man was kind of in that vein where I had that same, you know, simplistic, like, yeah, there's platforming, but then I got this other thing, which is shooting. So the classic games were my first exposure to it. Actually, like my first, like when I realized Mega Man was a thing, I was actually looking at music, like on YouTube, for example, and like one of the recommendations is like a while back, but it was like Wily 2 from Mega Man 2.
Oh, the classic.
And then I clicked on it and I listened to it and I was like, oh my God, like 8-bit music can go this hard? Like, this is so good. I got to find out what game this is. So then from there, I discovered Mega Man 2, try to play Mega Man 1, get pissed off at Bombsman stage. I just jumped to 2. And then I was pretty much just enthralled from there, went from classic to X, and then just kind of slowly went throughout the series. And now it's just, yeah, it's been a wild ride. All of a sudden, now I'm here doing Mega Man preservation and things like that. And it's just, yeah, it's a great series.
It really is. Naoya, how about you?
For Rockman, what got me into Rockman was EXE. I used to watch Rockman EXE on, I think Kids WB showed it.
Yeah, the anime. Yeah,
overseas. And then I remember getting some of the DVDs as well at times. And then I didn't really get much back into it until after I met Cosmos. And he introduced, you know, more of the Rockman stuff. I got the PETs and I played some of the Battle Network games. And I've slowly been getting more and more into it as I go on. Really fun series.
Do you have a favorite game yet?
So far, the first Battle Network game, that's my favorite one so far, but I'm still looking into the other ones.
You must be really excited about the collection coming out at the time of this recording, coming out pretty quickly, pretty soon.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting.
Yeah, that's gonna be really great. What makes me curious is actually, especially for you, Cosmo, like what kind of drew you to feature phone games? Was it the Mega Man Lost Mega Man game element, or was it just more to it in general?
The whole thing with the feature phones is a little interesting too, in that like for a while I knew that the games existed. Like when I got into Battle Network, I had like the art book and I was looking at the art book and I was like, oh, interesting. Like I never seen these characters before. Oh, flip phone games. Oh, sucks. You know, and I just kind of move on from there. Or when I got into Legends, like, you know, Five Islands, I heard about it and I was like, okay, you know, it's too bad. It's on the flip phone. Cool, I guess. But, once I got like formally involved with the Mega Man community and like same, well, actually this is going to be like a whole like brief mini story on how I even got into the Mega Man online community, because it kind of leads up to the whole feature phone thing. Okay. In 2020, I had like so much time on my hands. So I made this Lego model of the Flutter for Mega Man Legends, and I put it on Lego Idea, which is kind of like a crowdfunding platform. And if you get a certain amount of votes, Lego can consider to make this a set. Mm. So being the Lego fanatic I was, I decided to make that. And I was like, well, I gotta market this somehow. So I decided just to make an online account for the sake of that.
Yeah.
But as I got deeper into the Mega Man community, I came upon this thing called the Rockman Dash Great Adventure Guide, which it's an old 20-year-old guidebook on Mega Man Legends. Japan only has a ton of concept art. And I was looking at scans of that, and I was like, man, these scans are of terrible quality. And like, you know, I want this to be in English. So I thought to myself, how about I just go buy a book off Japan, scan it, and just scan it into English? You know, it shouldn't be too bad, right? But that turned out to be like, so that took over my life, you know, for a lot. Like the Lego project kind of went back into my mind. I just started to focus on this, for preserving this Rockman Dash guidebook. And actually this past summer, we were able to finish it. Whole thing in English, including all the concept scribbles. We were able to discover some new development details. Thank you. Yeah, so that was like, that kind of got me into Mega Man preservation. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I kind of jumped on to the out-of-print Taiwanese Rockman Dash manhwa comic. And then in December, In December, Brian, he retweets and replies to this now-deleted tweet that basically showcased Phantom Network on this AU phone. And I just kind of saw that and I was like, huh, you know, maybe I want to help him out with this stuff, because, you know, Brian's a cool guy and I always want to help out with this kind of stuff. You know, now that I'm already starting that guidebook. So I do some research on the phone, and then I DM him about it, and he's like, oh, this is such, you know, cool information. So he adds me to this tiny group chat on the 30th of December. So almost at the beginning of 2021.
Yeah.
There's only like two other people in there. And then it just kind of kickstarts from there. Where he talks about, oh, we got this phone with the game. And then I just kind of start researching
kind
of phones. And then a billion things happen. And eventually we find, one of the team members knows someone with the games. And then through a bunch of shenanigans and a fundraiser by the Mega Man community, we were able to cover the cost of indefinitely renting that phone. So then the project kind of starts. Yeah. And since Brian's a super busy guy, like I initially was the guy who recruited people and did research, but as he started to become occupied with other things due to the blog, I just kind of started becoming a de facto leader. And now I'm just kind of the leader of the team. But in doing so, I've become exposed to so many other types of flip phone games that went out at this time. And in doing so, it's just like, you know, the Final Fantasy VII ones, you got like, you got Devil May Cry, you've got Katamari, and it's like, this is like a brand new world of gaming that I had never heard of before.
You also have the after years, Final Fantasy IV, which is my horrible baby, which I've talked about many times. I think on Retronauts, I have a show entirely about the after years, which Square did bring off feature phones and brought onto the Wii, and then several other systems. And yeah, Square is one of a few companies that did that actually did bring out those feature phone games. So as much as we said, oh, gross, this is like a real cash grab, it's really good that they did it, except now it's on the Wii and it's stuck there.
Yeah, unfortunately. So basically, that's what happened, where I got into the Mega Man feature phones, that I become more aware of other feature phones. And then last year, the iMode website, which was like the last online storefront that hosted these games, it shut down. So before then, I wrote an open letter to video game preservation organizations. And that eventually led to an effort by the Game Preservation Society to download as many of those games as possible.
Wow.
And they were able to download over 800 games. And unfortunately, thousands were lost to time. But through that effort, I realized, you know what? There's more to feature phones than just Mega Man. You know, it's like at a point, this like our Mega Man project doesn't just affect, you know, our Mega Man games. You know, our findings affect other feature phone games that need preservation. And that's definitely something that we're going to go into depth later on in this episode. But yes, a little bit of a ramble for me. I'm sorry. But
no, that's totally. This is kind of new territory for a lot of people. Like, Naoya, do you work with Cosmo closely, or do you work on other games as well? Or just how did you get involved in all this?
So it started with back like the end of 2020. I decided to get the P900 IV, the Final Fantasy VII Advent Children's cell phone.
Yes.
And then I thought to myself, well, there was a Final Fantasy VII cell phone game before Crisis. And I wonder if that's ever made any progress, because Remake was on the hype and everyone just got finished playing Remake. And I looked back into it and I went on I Googled it and I found that the FF7 mobile initiative page on Livestream that Shedemp started, and I looked into it, and I was just finding all the info about Before Crisis, and I wanted to play the game, but then I found out that the game was at the time of 2020, it was shut down, and I wanted to play the game because I was hungry for FF7 stuff.
Of course, I'm always hungry for FF7 stuff.
Yeah. And then I started looking deeper into it, and I found out the game was shut down, and at that time, there was no way to play it. And I was like, well, that's dumb.
Yeah.
And then I just, I got in, and I bought the P900 IV, and I love the design. I love the shape of it. I love it's a very unique phone. And they were saying, oh, we're still looking for the lost game. I thought, okay, maybe I could help. And we tried looking, couldn't find it. But then as I got in more into looking into iMode, AU, and SoftBank, the three services that distributed Before Crisis, I also found out there were other games for it. Like, I eventually found out about the Rockman games and Persona and many more other mobile games. And what drew me closer to it was that I looked further into Before Crisis, and it was a cell phone game, but Square Enix looked at it, or Nomura looked at it, and said, just because it's a cell phone game doesn't mean it has to be like limited. He pushed it to its limits and what it could do. And it can do far more than what Western cell phones can do.
Yeah.
Folks, as a podcaster, you would not believe the incredibly twisted things I have to look up on the internet just to bring you the content you crave. When my ISP saw the amount of hours I spent researching the Noid alone, I feared they were on the brink of sending the police to my apartment to do a wellness check. The digital paper trail I leave behind just to do my job is more than incriminating, it's downright embarrassing. I know most of you are probably thinking, why don't you just use incognito mode? Well, let me tell you something. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can see every single website you've ever visited. That's why, even when I'm at home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter who your internet service provider is. ISPs in the US can legally sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure server so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. And most of the time, I don't even realize I have ExpressVPN on. It runs seamlessly in the background and is so easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV, so there's no excuse for you to not be using it. Protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by Business Insider. Visit my exclusive link, expressvpn.com/retronauts, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/retronauts. ExpressVPN.com/retronauts to learn more.
For sure. Like, we will actually get into that right now, talk a little bit about feature phones, West versus East, because it's very, very different situations here. Basically, when we talk about feature phones, quote unquote, dumb phones, apparently I had no idea that was actually a name for them. So I learned something there. Basically, when we talk about it in the West, we talk about those like kind of those brick phones, those, that old Nokia you had, like, or the flip phone you had, and you didn't really have games for them. You had Snake. When you think about games on feature phones in the West, unfortunately, you think probably of the N-Gage for anything else, which is where a lot of those weird feature phone games ended up. But in Japan, it's kind of like there was an extra step in cell phone evolution between feature phones and smartphones, which eventually came and obliterated everything anyway. Japanese feature phones, they were as you were saying, so feature rich, and so, and some of the games were actually extremely impressive. Like, I've looked at footage and, you know, watched footage for some of these games, and of course not all of them are winners, but a lot are certainly playable, more than playable. And you'll probably have to educate me on the reasons why this happened, why Japan came what is known as kind of a Galapagos zone in terms of their cell phone development, because as I understand it, it was all contained to Japan, hence the use of Galapagos. But they, even though there was some attempt to expand into the West, it just did not work out. And moreover, when here, when Westerners had their phones and they brought them over to Japan, they wouldn't work on Japanese networks. So it was a very, very closed in and closed space where some really cool features and cultures and games have evolved, basically. Do you want to tell us a little bit about why those games were actually quite good versus Western phone games, which were kind of miserable because controlling with a dial pad does it's not great. It's not fun.
I think just all the support from big publishers like Square Enix and Capcom, I think those were really the main things that made feature phone games what they were. Because you got big franchises, like we just said, Rockman, Final Fantasy VII, all of those franchises, they all have these unique outings as well as ports onto these cell phones. And as you said, some of them definitely are better than others. But I think it's just that. And then also the way these phones are made. I've had the pleasure of actually meeting Naya in person. He was able to show me and give me a few of these feature phones.
Oh, cool.
And now I have now I have too many of them. I have like 12. And then I got this nice lithium ion battery bomb that's in my drawer. But basically all of these phones are just like, when you hold them in your hand, like, they just feel so premium.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell they got a lot of care put into them. Like some of the phones have these unique features. Like, for example, one of them opens up and then you can flip the screen sideways.
Yes, I've seen that. I think so.
Like one of them, like the Fujitsu made a phone, and what you can do is you can snap your hand sideways and the screen goes to the side. Like
that's physically, just, like a hardware thing instead of just
It's like a physical thing. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be incredible. I want that.
Yeah, there's another one that opens up like it's like you close the phone and then you open it sideways, kind of like a book.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a Windows 7 one where it was like, wow. It was like half, it's literally like half Windows 7, half whatever it was, the ecosystem was, the Java ecosystem.
Symbian,
there we go. Yeah. And it's literally two halves of a phone stuck together. So it's super thick. And it's like,
it's like half phone. And then the other, it's like one board is a phone board and the other one is a mini computer.
Wow.
Yeah. So as you can see, those kinds of leaps and bounds they made really enabled the games to be really crazy, because some of the phones that have like a sideways screen, the games use that. Like, you got kart racers that maximize that horizontal side. You got a third person Gundam shooter that runs really well, like 30 FPS, really smooth.
Wow.
And that uses the phone pad like sideways. So you use like the arrow keys as like a kind of like a D-pad basically. So I think those are the two main things. It was just the unique effort and architecture of these phones. Unfortunately, the locked off part's a big disadvantage, but you know what they put into the phones is a lot. And then just having the support of major game publishers like Bandai, Square, Capcom, Taito, etc.
Now, when you had a bunch of these models of feature phones out there, would Square like support them all, or was it like a network thing? Because you wrote a whole thing about Japanese networks here that looks like is very interesting, if not a little bit in depth.
Oh yeah, we can look into that. So basically, there were three main telecom providers that provided these games. Mm-hmm. The most prominent one was NTT Docomo. They had something called iMode, which is actually the world's first like wireless mobile internet service, the first ever, 1999, and it's actually still going to this day. It's going to shut down in 2026. So very, 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 very surprising. It's still going on. But yeah, so that one allowed users to download things like iApply. And iApply is basically what you call downloadable games or applications. They had, they had like a McDonald's app that's for some reason pre-installed on a bunch of phones. But
Welcome to your phone. Here's McDonald's.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of people like use the term iMode games as like a blanket term for Japanese feature phones. But right. I like using Japanese feature phones because there are other services like another telecom provider decided to compete with Docomo, and their name was AU or KDDI, and they made something called EasyWeb. And that's basically just a copy of what Docomo did, except now you've got a different architecture that games run on. Most games ran on something called JME or J2ME, and that was Java Micro Edition. So anytime you see these feature phone games, it's usually on the Java software platform. Right. However, the Easy Web games, they actually ran on something called Brew, which is actually different. It was like, it's a platform that has native code. And they're more capable than the Java games, although they're harder to program for, but they're more capable in terms of graphics.
Yes.
And then the third provider, which last but not least, unfortunately, the one that's the most inaccessible to us is SoftBank's Yahoo Keitai. It went under two different names, but for the sake of simplicity, we're just going to call them SoftBank Games. They're the most locked off of all of them because to start a game up, you have to have 3G service, which...
Oh, no one has that anymore.
Yeah, rest in peace. Yeah. So basically EasyWeb and Yahoo Keitai from SoftBank, both of those are shut down, but iMode still exists. However, the storefronts, like the websites that used to host the storefronts for games on iMode, those are now shut down. So, yeah. And also regarding like compatibility with certain phone models, Naya, you can talk about that because I think you know a little bit about like, you know, certain phone models supporting certain games and things like that.
Oh, like what game supports like what phone model or something?
Yeah, basically. Like it doesn't seem very integrated. It seems, is it like kind of pieced off, kind of separate, or is it more like if you have an iPhone, you can play all these games?
Oh, well, the iMode, for iMode, they have iAppli, and iAppli has Doja, Docomo Java, and then Star, which is a successor to Doja. And for example, Final Fantasy One. It's a very simple game. That one can be played on nearly all the iAppli phones.
Right.
But a game like Dirge of Kerbin's Lost Episode or Rockman, the Five Islands game, that's a 3D one, right, Cosmos?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's that would most likely, even though it wasn't on Docomo to my knowledge, it would have been a Star game where it started doing the 3D API. If you wanted to check the compatibility list, for say like Before Crisis, Final Fantasy One, or a Rockman game, you would have to go to that page on the storefront. So, for example, iMode, they would have a compatibility list page, and you could check whether P95V, SH10, or whatever device, and it'll say either it works, it's still being worked on, it does not support it.
Right.
And the sad thing is, the only way to view this is if you have a iMode cell phone, AU SoftBank cell phone, and then you go to that page, which requires a contract, and then and then you have to check. So in a weird way, you have to pay for all this stuff just to see if it's compatible, or, you know, go find someone else who has it. But either way, it was way too inclusive.
It's actually funny to think about how obsolescence sneaks up on us in the weirdest way. Like Cosmo, you mentioned you need a 3G connection. I said, well, good luck finding that. You're never going to find it. And I have recently, I dug up a netbook that I had in the 2010s. And the only way to connect with it is through a WEP that doesn't support WPA. And it's like there's an update somewhere out there, but it was Linux-based, so I couldn't really figure it out. But there you go. I couldn't connect to the internet on this computer that was meant for the internet because... the format simply didn't exist anymore. It's like when we think about obsolescence, we think about hardware most of all, but software and contracts and stuff like this. This is a whole new level of trying to get game preservation done. It looked like a nightmare, but the fact that you're trying so hard at it is just really, really commendable.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, we're making good progress.
Anybody on the Japanese side over there in the cell phone land who's kind of working with you guys and helping you out?
There is one person on Twitter named Sosi. He has been helping me with uncovering more info and data on Before Crisis. He still has footage that he slowly shares of other Turks and characters that to this day we still don't have video footage of.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, that's really it. We've found people who do have the iMode games of various like titles, even ones I never even knew existed, but they don't seem to be helping, mainly because it would involve having them to send their phone to us and then we would have to find where to hack it. And, you know, they just, some from what I've met, like Sosie would love to help preserve Before Crisis, but that involves giving up a phone. And what I haven't also considered is that the phone also holds a lot of memories, not just of what the data is on there, but the physical item itself that they've had through the years. And so far, he's kind of the only one who's been helping with that. But in terms of video game preservation in general, not many. Some do want to help, but I think they're afraid of possible legal backlash.
I've heard of that.
Even though there has been no proof or evidence that anyone's gotten busted for doing it, but I think it's a lingering fear that will pop up when you bring it up to them. That no matter what your goal is.
I have heard of that, so I think I understand where you're coming from. I certainly understand not wanting to mail out feature phones willy-nilly, because these things are now basically precious. They're lost items. They, and as you say, full of like pictures and music and stuff that is not easily replaced. So it is a very tricky situation. But let's talk a little bit about the games you're interested in preserving. I'd like to start with Crisis Core What's the name of the Final Fantasy VII game we're just talking about?
Before Crisis.
Before Crisis, thank you. Everything's Crisis with Square Enix. Before Crisis, I remember reading about it, and it seemed very interesting to me. It really did seem like a continuation or a prequel, I think, of the story of Final Fantasy VII. I think Red 13 even has like a girlfriend in it or something. There's another cat dog, whatever he is.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of game? Is it an RPG? Is it action? Is it like...
It's a real-time network action RPG game.
Okay. So do you know how it is played? Like, I know it's coming to modern phones, I think, very soon. So I am definitely curious about it.
Yeah, to my knowledge, until we get any further evidence, Ever Crisis just seems to be more of giving the fans the opportunity to experience the story side of Before Crisis.
Yes.
We still don't know if the gameplay mechanics from Before Crisis will come into play. I hope it does, but as so far, until I'm proven wrong, I don't think so. So Before Crisis, Final Fantasy VII takes place 6 years before the events of Final Fantasy VII, and so it also takes place during Crisis Core.
Yes.
The game consists of 26 chapters, which are the main story, and it is also two special episodes, which is Reno, which takes place during the events of Crisis Core. So if you remember when Zack was in Midgar and he was about to help Sisne, the Turk, and got stopped by Reno and Rude saying that Sector 8 is Turk's district, I forget the line. And then that event, when Reno and Rude run off, you get to actually experience that story mission on Before Crisis.
Right.
You get to play Reno, and to this day it hasn't been archived. And that's for the story term. Then there's free mode. And in free mode, you as a Turk, you get to explore various maps of Final Fantasy VII, such as like Icicle Inn, Midgar, and you get to go to the underground sewers, and you get to visit all these places, and there's various different types of new things you could do to fight new monsters, to fight new enemies. Even some enemies appeared for the first time in the Final Fantasy VII universe, such as Ice Bomb.
Oh, like, really?
That was I found out that enemy appeared in Before Crisis first, and then appeared in Crisis Core, but we don't have video footage of that. We have I have info data on that
right.
I'm releasing soon. But and besides from those little nitty-gritty details, and then during a mission, when you die in a mission, it's not game over. What happens is when you die, you have two options. One, you get sent to the camp where you're being held hostage by Avalanche, and you wait there, and your friends in the real world, Turks, they get to go to that Avalanche camp, and they have to rescue you by fighting a whole bunch of Avalanche members, and they can rescue you. And by doing this, you get extra rank points, EXP and AP, or you can decide not to get sent to the camp, and you can spend rank points to get revived.
Right. Oh, that's pretty cool. So it definitely had a social element, which is something that Japan has always been excellent with their portable games, of course. Monster Hunter on the PSP is a great example of that. But I like the idea of my friends rescuing me and me just kind of sitting there and waiting and no one ever comes to get me. That would be really sad.
Well, and they actually have it so that if no one comes to rescue you, Reno will actually come and rescue you.
That's amazing. He's like, so, I'm bored. Just get out of here.
So, and they have other things such as you can generate materia with your camera. And if you're in battle and you need some assistance, you can ask for materia from your friends. And then you'll get an email, like an actual email from your phone. You open it and it's a son saying name of the Turk needs materia. And then you go to headquarters and you get to select what materia you send. And the materia you send, depending on which one it is, you will determine what summon you can perform. So, for example, four red materias will be Ifrit. Four blue would be Shiva. Four light blue would be Leviathan, and so on. And many of the summons from Final Fantasy VII appear in the game as well. And there's just, the more you dig into it, the more there is for Before Crisis. There's just
it just sounds like a really meaty game. Like when I think about actually Crisis Core and how they all communicated to each other during that time when the game was first initially made, it really does come across as they're all just using a bunch of feature phones and using like the kind of subscribing more to the Japanese culture of cell phones than we had in the West. And now thinking about it in that light, it's like, oh, that's actually pretty interesting. That's pretty fun, actually. How much memory was in the average phone? Because it says here for Before Crisis, it had 26 chapters, but it auto-deleted old chapters to save space. Owie.
Yeah, so they were really good about data delivery. Like from what I understood is that they were able to, what they took advantage of the way iMode was, and they were able to do it so that in a way you were streaming the game.
Ah, interesting.
And you would it would download the files, and it would put it to the scratch pad, which is like a temporary storage area. Mm-hmm. And then they were able to take the data, put in there temporary until you want to do something new. And so with this, they were able to basically make a full-fledged cell phone game.
That's cool.
For cell phones.
You have here also Dirge of Cerberus, the last episode. I'll be honest, Dirge of Cerberus is a really terrible game. How is the feature phone game, if you know?
I have the demo. It comes pre-installed on a P903i. So if anyone wants to buy it, if you buy a P903i, you may or may not have the chance to play it if it's on there. Honestly, this game is decent. It's pretty cool for a flip phone game. And it's not the best, but it is honestly a very unique game. And although it was distributed in North America, it didn't, last long. But then again, that was during the iPhone uprise. But either way, it's fun, it's interesting, and it's a unique experience, I'll say that.
It seems like it would be. Like, it's a shooter on a feature phone, and did that work out for it?
I think it did, yeah, because I was able to have fun with it. And you can go walking from three-person to first-person shooting. Mm-hmm. And then also, you are able to dodge, you're able to switch out your weapons, and overall, it's a fun game. They have cutscenes, and
oh, cool.
It really is like a full-fledged Final Fantasy VII game. When Square Enix came to the mobile games, they really didn't...
They brought everything.
they did. They did. They pushed it to its limits.
Yeah, Dirge of Cerberus last episode is... It's really fun. I can also attest to it. It's like a... Yeah, as you said, it's like third-person... The graphics are like PS1 graphics. You know, it's quite smooth. And the transition when you get to first person mode and you're shooting, like, it's a little clunky because you can only move left and right and you're kind of slow at that. But like, just like, it has an auto lock on, and then you're running around, and you're grabbing stuff, you can go up ladders.
You can move the camera too. You can.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's true. Yeah. You can move the camera.
It's just, it's a little bit bizarre, but they were able to do that.
Yeah. I think if you face one direction for long enough, the camera auto rotate to go behind you. So it's like, even they thought of that. Like, even they knew, controlling this third person, thing is going to be kind of clunky on a cell phone. So let's just design a little extra thing for the camera just to make your life a little easier. You know, so that's very sophisticated.
Everyone, it's Jeremy, and the older I get, the more I find that there is no feat of household engineering more complicated than achieving comfortable sleep. I'm cold-natured and want to sleep under a pile of blankets, but my hot-natured wife wants to turn down the thermostat and eventually kicks all the blankets over to my side, night after night. The one thing we can both agree on is that our sheets from My Sheets Rock work for us both. My Sheets Rock created the regulator sheets, which are designed to specifically keep hot sleepers cool and cold sleepers comfortable. They regulate temperature, wick moisture, stay breathable, and are so soft you'll sleep comfortably every night. That's because these sheets are made from best-in-class bamboo rayon, the holy grail of sheeting. This miracle material transfers body heat twice as efficiently as regular sheets and reduces humidity by 50%, so you can experience your best night's sleep yet. So whether you're like me and treat sheets as the starting layer of a mountain of comforters, or you're like my wife and don't want any covers except sheets, bedding from My Sheets Rock will fit your needs for perfectly comfortable sleep, whatever they are. Don't believe me? Their 5-star customer reviews speak for themselves. Plus, they offer a 90-day risk-free trial and free shipping and returns. Check out My Sheets Rock at mysheetsrock.com/retro and enter our code RETRO for 10% off and free shipping. That's mysheetsrock.com/RETRO, code RETRO.
Let's talk very briefly, or as long as we want, actually, about other games on these feature phones, because I'll be honest, I didn't know about half of these. Like, it's mentioned there's a lot of ports. What ports of what, like DS games or other games, GBA games?
Yeah, usually, like, yeah, I'd say, yeah, GBA games, like the Mega Man games, they're like the Battle Network, Rockman EXE games on the feature phones. Those are not ports, but they're very close to their counterparts. But we're not to Mega Man yet. We got to focus on the other guys first. So Capcom was, as we'll see, they're a really, really big supporter of feature phone gaming. So like they got Devil May Cry, they got Lost Planet, they got Monster Hunter, they got Ace Attorney. They got Ace Attorney ports. They also got a Street Fighter 2 port. Naya hates how it plays, but I kind of find it cool because the pound key is a Hadouken button. So if you just spam pound, all you got to do is Hadoukens.
How do you forget? It's so easy.
Metal Gear Solid is also on it too.
Really? Like the original? Like the PlayStation version?
Yeah, there's like one brew phone that does come up with a pre-installed Metal Gear Solid game.
It sounds like a lot of these providers had a lot of deals to distribute their games like as exclusives on their phones. Is that the right impression that I'm getting here?
To some extent, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The W51H it comes pre-installed with the Before Crisis Final Fantasy VII demo, and the demo was placed on that phone so that it could help with the sales of the W51H cell phone.
Right, cool. So how, playing Street Fighter on a phone, that sounds like a nightmare. I think I'll pass on that one, but I mentioned here Katamari Damacy Mobile, which I can't play original Katamari because it makes me motion sick, but I like the idea of using it had tilt controls apparently through the camera.
Yeah, so it came preloaded on this Docomo phone called a P904i, but of course it was distributed long after that. But P904i, that was released in 2007. So basically, they didn't have gyrometers inside the phone. So what they did is they used this technology called GestureTech Mobile. Mm-hmm. And basically, it would use the camera to detect vibrations. So you have to have a lot of light in the room. But basically, based on like a camera and everything, it can detect like how you rotate the phone left, right, up, down, things like that. And it's actually, I got a copy myself. It is really accurate. I'm really surprised at how accurate this is. You got to hold down a button to start that. Kind of like recalibrating it, but yeah, when you tilt it, it's very good. And it's interesting, like the company behind that camera technology, they also worked on like the Xbox Kinect and other different kinds of devices. So they definitely know their stuff, the guys who developed that technology. But it was also used in Western phones too. Like I found a commercial for it, like for Verizon phones, and it's more pathetic. Like, oh look, I'm rolling this ball around this track. Look at the ball go. But here, I'm rolling a ball and I'm rolling stuff up with the ball. So
yeah,
you know, it's
I'm rolling
better.
My dad into this ball because he destroyed the universe because he's a drunken idiot. That's a better pitch. That's definitely a better pitch. Ease, like I love Ease games, but are these like the older ones that you would find on the phones, or were they like the more bumping to enemies older ones?
Well, let's see. Shin East 1 actually got a 3D remake, a unique 3D remake on these phones. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, and then they got Shin East 1 3D Gaiden, which is a totally original full-length game starring a character named Dogi.
Oh, I love Dogi.
Yeah, Dogi, there we go. Yeah, and then they also had some like miscellaneous games, and that's kind of a trait with feature phone games based on IPs. Like, you get those nice original games, and then you get stuff like East Pinball and East, like a billion different types of solitaire.
Solitaire sounds kind of nice.
Yeah, there's also Final Fantasy VII Snowboarding, although I think that was released on Western phones too, right, Naya?
It sounds familiar. Yeah. I love Snowboarding in FF7.
So yeah, East got those ones, a lot of them. And they also got this thing called East Nexus, which is apparently an MMO, but I can find barely any info on it. But
I have heard when I browse through old stuff for artwork for old games, like one thing I can say off the top of my head was Final Fantasy Adventure. AKA Seiki Densetsu, the first one. I know that had a feature phone remake that we never got here, but it has some new art. And that, I think, was like one of my realizations that like, oh, there's a whole market going on in Japan that I know next to nothing about. So I would pursue these images and notice I don't recognize these at all. And then I'd learn much later, these are from some network game that was involved in Japan, and it was all connected, and it was a whole separate thing. And it just sounded like such an interesting, but it's disappointing that I missed out on it all. But you do have Sonic here. And I have to say, we did not miss out on Sonic on feature phones. He was here. He was bad. He was Sonic. I like Sonic very much, but sometimes he does. I mean, I would hope to God that this wasn't the version that was on the GBA, because that was just whoever did that version of the game should go to jail.
Yeah, they did Sonic ports. Like, they had Sonic 1 and 2. One of my phones that's now, well, it died, rest in peace. It's like 20 years old anyways. That had a Sonic 2 port on there. Mm-hmm. And it plays, I mean, it's like 10 frames a second, but I mean, the controls are snappy with 10 frames a second at least. and the music is also a little remixed too. They add a few like extra, you know, side melodies in there. Sonic had some ports. There's also something called Sonic 3D Golf. That's preloaded on there.
I have that.
And that's a 3D game.
That sounds fun, actually. I guess Sonic's a ball and you hit him.
It's actually pretty cool.
I don't think Sonic's a ball, though. I don't think it's like that one Kirby game. I think it's just literally Sonic with a golf club and he just...
Oh, Sonic's playing golf. He's not the golf ball.
Yeah, I guess Sonic Golf. Yeah, you get to play as Sonic, Knuckles, Tails, and Amy. And yeah, you get to play golf. It's actually a pretty decent game.
It sounds like it might be fun. Like, I think one benefit to maybe these feature phone games is, even though some of them can be very impressive, you're not exactly expecting them to be like God of War, the next chapter. You're just like, these are fun distractions, kind of like Snake, but on a much higher level. So if you hold them to a certain standard, I can see these being like a lot of fun on a long train ride, which I've heard Japan has many opportunities for.
Yeah, that's true. And then also, quickly, before we get to another game, we got to quickly jump back to Final Fantasy. They did port Final Fantasy 1 and 2 in their entireties as preloaded games on like the earliest feature phone. So like the P900i or cloud cell phone, P900iV. That's from 2004. So almost 20 years old at this point. But like early on, they were much more generous with what they gave you in demos. Like later on, like, they just give you like one stage of Sonic, for example, and then, you know, that's it. But here they just gave you the whole entirety of Final Fantasy 1, but it's like a port too. It's not even an emulation, so it runs really smoothly. The music is also slightly remixed. It's really nice. And then of course Final Fantasy 2 got the same treatment on the successor to that phone.
Yeah, there are a lot of RPGs I find on feature phones because they don't move very quickly. They're not like Sonic. They don't really... who can go at 10 frames per second probably shouldn't. So that would actually be very appealing, actually. I don't know. We said it was 2004. That would be like, holy crap, I can play my childhood game in my hand right now. Like, that would be mind-blowing. So I could see that really pushing the phone to some new heights in terms of sales, at least if I was there, which I wasn't. You also wrote down Kingdom Hearts Code. And I know almost next to nothing about Kingdom Hearts, but I do know, by God, it was on everything. So what was that? What did that involve, if you know?
So Coded. So originally Coded was released on iMode Docomo phones. and it's pre-installed on the P-01A, and it was, and you, and everyone's know what Recoded is. Basically, that's just a remade version of Coded, and it's a decent game. It ran for a while. The gameplay is interesting, I'll say, because, you know, you're playing a Kingdom Hearts game on a flip phone, or at least in this case, one of those phones where it can, you can close it and turn it into like a landscape phone.
Right, right.
And then I forget who, someone found it on the internet and started making an uproar about, you know, Kingdom Hearts Coded being found on this cell phone. And there were some other Kingdom Hearts games for iMode, but there wasn't really, they weren't like anything like nothing lore important,
right,
to my
Thank
knowledge.
God.
I mean, if it was, the Square would have obviously put it out already.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a decent game. It had story, a dialogue mode, everything. And the graphic cutscenes were nearly similar to what you would see on the DSi. So
right.
It was great. Some people actually managed to find someone who had the full game and try to move it to the SD card, but that one's encrypted and need some, we need some people to help find a way to get that unencrypted so others can play it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
For sure. That's, I guess, one topic we'll be going into is just like, why is this so hard? What could you do to help? But before we do that, did you want to talk about a little bit about the Mega Man games in particular? Were there any other games you guys wanted to shout out on the good old feature phones?
Before we shout out Mega Man, because you know, he's the man, the myth, the legend himself, but I want to quickly touch on, if Nadia wants to touch on anything else, he can, but for me, I want to touch on some freeware. We're talking about commercial games here, but there is a ton of like freeware, you know, varying in quality, of course, but like there are some indie developers, you know, like one guy, right, or single person teams, and they would develop their own games and they would just distribute them for free. And those ones are really, really hard to come by. And there's this user named Memory Hunter, and he's actually found like over 1,000 freeware iApply and EasyApply games. And like, this is all just coming from like intelligently and cleverly scouring websites and finding their data and archiving them. Because a lot of these websites have just got a bunch of Java files on there. They're just kind of left to rot and they're all forgotten, you know, and who knows when they could be gone. So yeah, he is really the main guy who's trying to start this, but it's a good incentive for people who want to get into preservation. But then we're getting ahead of ourselves. We still got a few more games to talk about.
No, for sure. Go ahead and mention anything else you'd like to.
There's also some Professor Layton games.
Right. Right, I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, there were. So as far as I know, there are two DS ports that are on there, and as well as a iMode exclusive Professor Layton game that we to this day still have no release, proper release. Deathly Mirror, I believe it's called. And that one actually was found recently by someone, and we're looking into trying to dump and preserve the game because, once again, the company, even though we've asked about, you know, releasing the game, you know, they still haven't said anything or, you know, give the excuse of, oh, well, that's just a cell phone game.
Is that an attitude you guys come up against a lot? Like when you're trying to preserve these, like, oh, they're just distractions, it's not really meant to be.
Oh, God, 100%. This is exactly what we're trying to combat, you know, with this kind of thing. These are more than just Snake. But
it's interesting, too, because recently Nintendo just started finally implementing the whole you can play Game Boy Advance games and Game Boy Color games officially on your Nintendo Switch, and G-Mode Archives, a company in Japan, they're porting cell phone games to Switch, and they're actually doing well enough to the point where three lost iMode games from Atlas, The Last Bible, got ported to Switch and PC. So slowly, you know, it's becoming less of, oh, it's a, you know, it's just a mobile game. It, you know, slowly there should be really no excuse to say no. Right. If there's a big fan audience for it, go for it. But
I think Square Enix has realized, and that's why we're getting like Before Crisis and stuff like that. And I'm glad to see Atlas had a little bit of a hand in that as well. That's very important. Accessibility is everything when it comes to preservation.
And one last thing for the Persona game, there was a online mobile Persona game where you would go to Decepticon High, but you're not the Persona 3 protagonist. You are your own protagonist, and you could go with friends to Tartarus. You could fight shadows. You can go to school, level up social links and all that stuff. And it was in the Persona 3 universe, but little info is available on this game at all. And it didn't seem to last long, to my knowledge. But either way, it was still something that existed for flip phones in general. So that's right now.
Games as a service in general don't last long if they don't really perform. And that's a shame because that's how a lot of games are lost.
Yeah.
Monster Hunter look on these phones? Were they ports? Were they something else entirely? Because I imagine that would have been a huge, huge thing for Japan.
It looked okay. It looks to play okay. Mm-hmm. Someone on YouTube already covered this subject. And I mean, to my knowledge, like the gameplay looks decent and everything, but I don't have much knowledge or info on Monster Hunter.
Yeah, and Ace Attorney, of course, was the series on the Game Boy before we got it on the DS. Were those ports, or did they get something separate as well?
Not sure.
I believe there are ports. They were ports. Yeah.
Yeah. I know Capcom at least did a lot of early ports on the iOS when it first came out, and eventually they got better at it, but the first batch of games was pretty miserable. And to make things worse, along comes iOS 8, which destroyed their library. I don't know exactly the technicalities of why, but everything broke, and they had to re-upload it. And here comes iOS 11 to destroy more games. I think Capcom was better this time, but stuff like this is a really... You get a lot of speed bumps when it comes to preservation, that's for sure. And with Mega Man, can you guys explain a little bit more about the games, maybe starting with the Legends ones? I think it's called Five Islands. Like, is it canon? Is it... I know it is a side story, but and I know there are the bonds. There is a translation online. You can find it, like a playthrough that's been professionally translated or fan translated. It sounds really good, actually.
Yeah. So Rockman Dash: Great Adventure on Five Islands was released in 2008 for Docomo devices, only for Docomo devices. So you were talking about exclusivity there. This is only exclusive to Docomo phones. And it is canon, I think, because, it takes place between Legends 1 and 2. And it was obviously released, like, way after 1 and 2 came out. And, well, rest in peace, 3. But,
no kidding.
At the last island, because there are 5 chapters and they're released on a biweekly basis.
Right.
And each chapter is a different island. And the last chapter does have an elevator to Elysium that's broken. So you can kind of see, like, Vovona has no idea what Elysium is yet. So that means it must take place between 1 and 2. It also features Denise Marmalade, who's
from
Adventures of Tron Bonn.
She was hilarious.
Yeah, she's pretty funny in this game, too, although at a reduced capacity.
Yeah, I just remember playing the game with my husband before we were even married. This was me just hanging out with him, and we bought Tron Bonn together. And we played that chapter, and I was playing as Tron, of course. I picked up a car or something. Denise is running around everywhere. She's, like, on fire. I pitched the car. No, sorry, it was a mailbox. I pitched the mailbox from, like, a long distance and just slowly, slowly fall. Like, just beautiful shot. Just hits her. It explodes. It was the most – she's just lying out on the ground, sprawled dead. It was – I couldn't stop laughing for, like, half an hour. It was just too perfect for me. What a great series.
Yeah, so – So yeah, the gameplay is very similar to how it plays on the PlayStation. You still got those great tank controls. I will still say if you get used to them, they're not so bad, but I can see some people getting turned off of the series because of it.
But
the graphics are very similar. You got like Hanmaru Doll is like the final boss, I think. But also like the sprites for the faces and everything, like the faces have multiple expressions. They're very expressive. You know, you got Volna rubbing his head, and you got him, shocked, like a shocked face is absolutely hilarious in this game. It looks so silly, but
it does.
But so you're mentioning online. There was one guy, 2011, I think his name is Suzukaze. He's since disappeared off the face of Earth. unfortunately. I don't know where his whereabouts are, but he recorded like a full playthrough of the game.
Yes.
And that's on YouTube now. And then like the fan translation, that's 100% fan made. And like Get Me Off the Moon is an organization that does a lot of this stuff. They're great.
Oh,
guys.
Right. It was Get Me Off This Moon. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah. And they were the ones that set up this thing where, you know, we're going to translate the script of the game, but then we're also going to voice it over. So they got some great voice actors. They did Three Islands, and then it went on a hiatus for like 5 years. And then I think a year and a half ago, I was talking to Chomp, who's the head of Get Me Off the Moon. And I was like, you know what? If you need a video editor, like apparently like most of the lines are already done. So like I was able to edit videos with this other user named Trej from Mega Man Legend Station. We were able to get the fourth island uploaded. And now the fifth and sixth island are kind of in development hell because, you know, all the voice actors are busy doing their own thing. Right. And then, of course, you know, we're also busy with our own things, but hopefully we'll be able to get those last two islands in English so people can understand what the characters are saying.
Yeah, for sure. How does it play? Like, it is a shooter, of course, a third person shooter. Mega Man Legends generally is. But it seemed to be running a little bit choppily when I saw the video. But I guess that's standard for a lot of feature phone games.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to play the best. I was like one of the translators on my Great Adventure Guide project. Midori.
I know Midori for a while.
Really nice person. Yeah, she actually had the game herself. It's actually her copy that we have. It's on SD card, but yeah, she lost it, and then I told her like maybe we could look one more time, and then she found it in her old residence. So
oh, beautiful. Thank God.
You know, but then I asked her how did it play, and she was like, it sucks. Like, I like the EXE games better, but she never had the EXE games apparently, only like a demo for one of them. But yeah, so basically, like, everyone who's not played the game is like, wow, this looks so awesome. But then someone who plays the game is like, it's okay.
It definitely strikes me as the kind of game where, of course, it needs to be preserved, of course, it needs to be out there in the wild because it should be. But I would watch a YouTube video of the translation and call it a day and skip ahead, like from even the gameplay parts, because that makes me a bit nauseous the way you kind of hitch through those hallways.
Exactly, yeah.
And what about the EXE games? Because I know less about them. Like, it's even the name is sliding off my brain right about now.
Yeah, so there are two EXE games. There's Rockband.exe Phantom of Network and Rockband.exe Legend of Network. So Phantom of Network was released in 2004 for Easy Web devices, and then in 2009 later for Docomo. So it was initially exclusive to Easy Web, and then later on Docomo got it as well. And I think maybe SoftBank, I think at the same time got it. But so Phantom of Network, that one has 8 chapters, and they're released on a schedule, just kind of like 5 islands. Right. And they have original characters and navies. So if you have like a returning Navi boss, like let's say Fireman.exe, that's explained as cache data, which ties in directly to the original plot. So
yeah, that's
the plot, I think, is like, it's like literally cache data. I know all the past is kind of being brought back and you're fighting against this. It's very, very hard to explain. Just look up synopsis online. it's a very, very, it's a very involved plot, surprisingly involved. And actually, the Easy Web version of Phantom of Network had an exclusive extra mode called Battler's Tower. And in it, you face 10 opponents in a row with the same battle chip folder. And the more you win, the more you go up in rank. And it simulates real-time PvP, but it's not really PvP. You're just comparing your scores to other online upload scores from players. And it also had a time attack boss mode. So
that's cool.
Yeah, so that's also really cool. And also, the EXE anime was actually airing its final season when this came out. So elements from this game were included in the final season of the Rockband.exe anime. And the episodes that it's in are really trippy. Like they kind of go into the, you know, extraterrestrial, whatever.
I seem to remember that season. Was that the season with Beryl and Duo and he went off planet and it was just like, sure, see ya, space cowboy.
Maybe. I mean, I think that was Stream. This is Beast Plus.
Okay, that's right. They were both pretty weird. By that point, I wasn't watching regularly. I don't know if you're familiar with Ryuko, who used to run she's run a lot of fan stuff dealing with EXE. And I'd kind of keep up via her screenshots and stuff. And I'd be like, I have no idea what's going on. And by this point, I had finished most of the Battle Network games, if not all of them. And I was just like, this isn't really in the game. I know it wasn't really engineered to be like the game from the beginning, but There comes a line you cross, and I'm just like, I got to check out now.
Exactly. Yeah. When Beast Plus, I mean, when the original Beast came around before Beast Plus, I was like, I'm out, because he got like parallel universes with, like, I don't know what it was, beast versions of themselves. Yeah. And like, I'm like, okay, you know, that's a little too much for me. I was already a little bit on the edge with the whole cross fusion, but now, oh gosh. But yeah, so yeah, Phantom Network was in the anime. However, Legend of Network was not as fortunate. That was released 2 years later in 2006 for Easy Web, and then once again 2009 at the same time as Phantom Network for Docomo devices. And that one also had 8 chapters, and this one had an original story that was featuring an ancient civilization with advanced net technology. Kind of reminds me of Star Force 2. Like the other one, it has a bunch of original characters. Like, the final boss is literally a Trojan horse. Like, it's a giant Trojan horse.
I think you're fighting that. Maybe that got a chuckle out of me.
And there's also a guy named Rideman who's a cowboy, but then like he gets corrupted and turns into a literal horse. His name is Reverse Rideman.
Oh my god.
It also has a new mechanic called the Trans Arm, which is very similar to Double Soul from Battle Network 4 and 5. You just kind of sacrifice a chip and then you can use that one ability. And it was released after the anime concluded and like Star Force is kind of starting up. So it's one of the few pieces of EXE material that was not adapted for the anime. So it's kind of forgotten in that sense, because when you look at the wiki page for Legend of Network and compare it to Phantom Network, I mean, there's almost nothing on here except for just name the chapters. So it's very, very not documented well. However, there is one user named Y-Chan, I think, on YouTube, and he has both Phantom Network and Legend of Network, and he has posted full gameplays, not direct feed, but like really, really good on like taping of a phone in a dark room. And he's done like multiple playthroughs. He's shown all the program advances. Yes, there are program advances in here. All of them, actually, I haven't even described how they play. It's kind of like you take the GBA, the battle system, and you just copy and paste it. It's basically identical. The main sacrifices they had to make were with the real life overworld. That is just limited to like a picture of a setting and then text boxes.
Text boxes, like kind of like Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah, yeah, very similar to that. Yeah, but when you get into the cyber world, you can run around the cyber world and go down different paths. However, it's from a top-down perspective instead of isometric because technical limitations. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That sounds pretty cool, though. It sounds like it is something to put more effort into than the usual kind of, you know, 10-cent game. Was it fun to play? Like, I don't know if you got to play it, or was it kind of like Legends where it's like, well, this is fun for the story, but...
Yeah, unfortunately, despite me being the leader of this project, I've never touched any of these games, which is sad, but that just goes to show how hard it is to even find a copy, because you really have to be in Japan. Currently another correspondent in the US has our phone, and he has tried out like playing it on a stream, because our certain phone model does have HDMI out. It's a pretty sophisticated one. So he was able to do some direct feed out, and it does seem like he had a fun time with it. Like, I guess the battle system, it was more like, you know, like, wow, like I'm really playing like the GBA game on a flip phone. It doesn't seem like there are as many compromises as Five Islands, because Five Islands, you got that, you know, 3D, the phone's already about to explode handling 3D. But with this, I imagine it's much more simple for the phone, so it probably runs much better. And like, yeah, it seems like the Rockman games are cursed, because I do have like the Mega Man one had a demo on some feature phones, and I was able to buy a phone that has it on there. But like every single Capcom demo that I have, they don't require any kind of internet access, but the only one that does is the Mega Man one demo. And I'm like, why? You know, it's just Cutman stage, you know, like it's not even that big. But unfortunately, like the Street Fighter 2 demo on the same phone does not require internet. So I think a separate team worked on the Mega Man feature phone, and they decided to be a jerk about it.
Yeah, that's very frustrating. I'm sorry for you guys.
Yeah, it's too bad, but like Mega Man games are just such a big rabbit hole, because they did have ports of already existing games. So for example, all the NES Rockman games were ported, and even Mega Man 9, when that came out, that was put on the phone here. And the NES version, the feature phone version of Rockman actually had a playable role. So you could play as role. And I think that's the only time you've ever been able to play as her, aside from Powered Up, of course.
Powered Up,
like, there's like your NES sprite, and you can go around and play as her.
That's amazing. I'm jealous.
Yeah, and then they also got Mega Man X games. They got X1 all the way to X4. X4 actually had two different versions, X version, a Zero version. There's some gameplay online.
Yeah.
I don't know how it plays. I forget what it looks like. Probably not the most impressive thing, but hey, you know, Mega Man X4, PlayStation game on a flip phone, and considering me intrigued.
There was a time when the novelty was everything, for sure. Like, even now saying, yeah, we put Mega Man X4 on a flip phone, I'd be like, wow, that sounds really cool. I know it probably doesn't play great, but I'm going to go look that up because that sounds amazing, just that we did it. Like, hey, look, we did the thing. It's a very human thing to do. So I guess like you actually wrote a great sort of addition to my notes here, just talking about like preservation and it's many, many, many problems. So let's start there. Like, why is it so hard to preserve these games? We've touched on a lot, but just kind of like recap what is going on here. There is just so many variables, it seems, that are hard to, it's like kind of plugging up one leak and then another one springs up beside you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if you want to start, go ahead.
Oh, okay. To find at the source is one of finding a person who still has the game.
Right.
Due to the fact that that the stores that exist that hosted this game, they do not exist anymore, as yeah. well as if you try to start it up after service is shut down, it doesn't seem to work. At least that's what I've seen from Twitter, various users on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you find the game or find the person who has the game, they're stuck on cell phones, hard to get off. Once you find that person, then it's a matter of trying to, well, one, if they're on the same page as you about preserving, and two,
right.
are they willing to help? And from my experience, you know, it could range from, even if you're the most kindest, nicest person or whatever, you know, if it involves helping out, trying to dump the game, regardless of reason, some are most likely not willing to help, or some right. are willing to help. And I will have to say again, you know, you can be as nice as possible, but if your intention is to preserve or dump a game, usually some people will say no.
Right, right.
As many people have said to me, oh, well, maybe you didn't ask nice. I said, I asked nicely. I just
you're a very nice person. I can tell you that right you. Now.
In their case, you're a nice person until the intentions are taking mm-hmm. a game off of a phone, even though what you're doing technically, you know, you're kind of doing free advertisement by putting the game out and doing free stuff for the company. But
yeah.
But then let's say you get the game and it's in your hands, then you gotta deal with the unique hardware. As since the game phones did not make it to America or North America or worldwide, like how the Nintendo Wii and GameCube hardware has made it to worldwide audiences, we haven't really had much time to investigate and look into what type of hardware they use. And the hardware they use is very unique.
Yes.
And even though it has been shown with things like the Wii and stuff that sometimes data sheets aren't necessarily needed to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But also that's it. Lack of help, lack of tech people to get involved and help. And then there's also the outcome, where it's like, you know, if we were to take a Nintendo Wii game and dump it, we get everything.
Right.
But if we were to take a cell phone game with Before Crisis and dump that, or a Mega Man game or something like that, most likely you're just getting a fraction of the data. And then once you get the fraction of data or the game at all, next is once it's on your computer, it's like, how do we even play this game?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So then also lack of emulators as well.
Right.
That's another thing. And then another downside too is that some people just, you know, delete the games when they feel like, you know, there's no use into hanging on to them. But not everyone's like this. For all we know, some people, so there could be someone out there that you know that may or may not have the game, but they don't like to, you know, share about what they do and don't have. Because, you know, overseas, you know, everyone's very like proud and happy to say, you know, I own Final Fantasy VII, I own Kingdom Hearts, that yada yada. Whereas in Japan, it's more like a, you know, if you ask them, oh, do you happen to have this? They're like, yeah, I do. But that's, you know, they're not as open to sharing about what they have.
Right. Yeah. Know. So it's a cultural difference, largely by the sounds of there. Because I have heard about, like, going back to our mutual friend here, Brian / Proto Dude. I know he has made some efforts in preservation and kind of run up against some resistance in Japan in particular. And it's just a culture thing. They're not doing it to be mean or cruel or anything like that. It's just, we talked in the past about how there's still some worrying about how dumping stuff can be considered a legal problem. So I understand, but still, man, that's a roadblock that's kind of difficult to get around, isn't it?
There's also lack of data sheets for the CPUs that are in these phones, as well as NAND chips. Some Docomo phones use OMAP, which is like a well-known, like if you ever get into the CPUs of phone world, that's a really well-known and has a lot of data sheets out there for these type of things. And then there's some who use Qualcomm CPUs, and a lot of people know about these too. In fact, most Qualcomm CPUs are actually in various Android phones, but I'm not sure about some, and not all of them, but some of them. But then there's also the NAND chips, and they also have some exclusive CPUs like Unifere, and there was another one. But there's some very unique chips that nobody has ever seen.
Yeah, and it sounds like
so old and delicate that even like touching it can destroy it or something like that.
It crumbles to dust. That would be depressing.
Kind of like that. It's like it's easy to break off.
Yeah, these are, it's not even just a matter of the data. These are very delicate. Like instruments, these are phones that are, most of them are like around 20 years old, probably not in the greatest shape anymore. I'm sure plenty are sturdy, but everything sounds so fragmented, I think is what's the, you know, a big problem here. There's also, you've mentioned that some of the games are in Java, so those are double dead. And just
so basically Nia covered a good amount of it. Finding the games is hard because just in the cultural difference over there makes it a little difficult to find things. And also full games, like, we'll get into this later when we talk about demos, but full games, they require the user's SIM card, like the same SIM card linked, you know, I have to have an iMode contract, for example, to play iMode games. And iMode contracts are not being sold anymore. So I can't like go to Japan right now and go to Docomo and say, all right, I know your server shuts down in 2026, but I want a contract. No, they stopped doing that in 2018. Yeah. So basically you need to have that SIM card in the phone to even play a full commercial game, which means like the our copy of Phantom Network and Legend Network, that does have the user SIM card in there. And that's why I'm really grateful to the person who gave it to us, because you know, it's not an easy thing to say, you know what, I'm going to go send a bunch of foreigners, you know, with my SIM card inside there, you know, for the sake of game preservation. So that's another difficulty. And then some of them are network reliant. Like the Mega Man games are not, that I know of. Rockman 1 demo, but like Phantom Network, Legend of Network, those ones are playing just fine without Wi-Fi. But for example, before Crysis, for example, that did rely on network, which means that even if we do get fragments of that game, it's likely not going to be the full thing because that relies on servers. And then Nia already touched on the data sheets for CPU and NAND chips. Those are all super not documented. It's hard to look into them. And then the other big problem is SD encryption, because some of these phones, you can move the game to a micro SD card. However, it isn't like I can just take the micro SD and plug it into my computer and then say, wow, you know, now I got five islands. Unfortunately, there is encryption. It's a C2 cryptomerous cipher. It's a modification of the DRM used in DVD video discs.
Wow.
And basically, it's like, it's really tough stuff. There are these, there's a German Danish professors who authored a study on how to crack this. And I contacted them. And this is before we made any progress in like getting there. Like all we had was encrypted data, but no like, you know, keys or S boxes or anything. And they both told me, unfortunately, it's mathematically impossible. Like the heat death of the universe will happen before you can get this. So that was kind of a bummer. However, team member named Bincat, he's able to find the substitution box, because you need an S box and you need device keys to crack this cipher, whatever it is. And he was able to find the S box. And basically the S box is the same as the ones used on DVD video discs, but like the device keys are different because the key generation algorithm is all, you know, screwy. But most recently I learned that The device keys are specific to each device. However, they can work for any micro SD, even one written in another device, but they're specific to each data type. And that's a big thing. I did not know this like a week or two ago, but like maybe we'll get in talking about the Rockman project and specifics later on, but it's a very, very good development has just recently happened with that, where like, yeah, if you do get the keys from one device, you could potentially apply this to a ton of other games that are also locked with SD card encryption. And then Naya briefly brought it up, but emulation is also a problem because once you have these files, how are you going to play them? So J2ME, the Java games, there's one emulator called J2ME Loader, and AU briefly had Java games. Like we call them Brew games because most of them are Brew. However, a few of them early on were Java. So that supports those games, and it also supports SoftBank games. However, it does not support Doja. And Doja is basically like a custom profile that Docomo made on top of JME. So basically, Docomo wants to throw the book at us because they're like, yeah, you can't, like, we're not raw Java micro edition, you know? We are Docomo Java, you know? We got a ton of extra layers.
Yeah.
So there's a great developer known as Zur. And this developer is working on creating an all-encompassing J2ME emulator that also includes support for these Docomo Java games. And that's been development for quite a bit of time. It's just one developer. But yeah, this user has been really hard at work and hopes to have like connections to, like, for example, RetroArch, things like that. So luckily that person is on our team. So it's kind of like an emulator is being slowly developed in conjunction with the project. And then if you want to get into Brew emulation, which is the Easy Web games, there's only one emulator called Melange, and it's missing some key features like audio. And that's because there's only one user, who's Bincat, who I talked about earlier. I mean, he's the only person who's developing it. So it's a one-man job. So as you can tell, this community is not very big. And that's another issue that we might get into later.
Yeah, but you're all very good at thinking on your feet, apparently, and solving these problems as they come, as there's an endless parade of problems. So you really, it sounds like you've really learned to expand your thinking and get over some of these issues.
Yeah. As I said, they're just throwing the book at us, everything, just every single little thing. They just want to make our lives tougher, but we're getting there.
Yeah, it speaks to the games and the passion behind game preservation in general that you would go to these lengths for these quote unquote crappy cell phone games. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's worth it. It's definitely worth it.
And actually, I'd like to briefly bring up a team member. If you're talking about passion and dedication, there is this team member named Craze on our team. He's done some great work with, like, there was a Brazilian console named the Zeebo.
Oh, I know the Zeebo. Yeah.
Yeah, the Zeebo. Yeah. So he's really like the forefront of that preservation as well as feature phones. And he's actually, he's a resident of Kiev, Ukraine. And at the beginning of the war, he got hit really hard by it, and he had to go to a bomb shelter. But in an incredible act of courage, in the early months of the war, he left his bomb shelter to go back to his home to save our Rockman Project supplies.
That's hardcore.
And that, I mean, the level of dedication this guy has, like from his bomb shelter, he was like taking photos of, you know, whatever the phones he was working on and helping the community out. So you were talking about passion, and yeah, this guy is one of the most passionate guys. I just want to, you know, highlight him because that shows, you know, dedication and love for these games.
A big shout out. I mean, stay safe above all.
Yeah, he's doing okay now, but
that's good.
It was a scary couple of days when he wasn't online.
That would make me kind of nervous for sure. So yeah, I'm just glad to hear just how much effort is put into this. And I think it's been worth it. I think game preservation, preserving this particular category of games, is just nobody really thinks about it as much as they should, because especially in the West, because it was just like a non-existent entity over here. So, yeah, thank you for everything you do. You said you want to talk a little about demos. Did you cover that?
Not yet. No,
not really. We didn't go fully into that.
Actually, yeah, before we get into demos, I might want to talk about like potential other like one other method of cracking these phones.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had this internet browser, and it used something called NetFront. And NetFront is the same browser that like the Vita and the PSP and the DS all use that. And there are many people who have cracked that version of NetFront, and they've been able to hack the DS and PSP. And this version of NetFront that we got on the phones is like way older than the ones on those handhelds, which means that I think it's incredibly susceptible. Like, because of the small size of the community, there hasn't been a lot of people who've been looking into it. Mm-hmm. But once someone gets the opportunity to, I think that could be a potentially viable method of cracking into these phones. It's just that, you know, we just need more people. And yeah, I guess now we can kind of segue into phone demos, because there are probably people listening that are kind of like, you know, this is really cool what these guys are talking about. I want to have one of these games myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's a good question. Unfortunately, if you want to have like Phantom Network, like a full paid game, like the entirety of Before Crisis, like there's no silver bullet to that. Like the only reason we have like the three big Rockman games is just because of luck. We just happened to know people that had them. You know, it took a long time, like a decade, to find somebody with them, but you know, we were able to find them, but there's no silver bullet. However, preloaded games are a different story. Really, Docomo pre-installed games, because a lot of these phone models, they each had different preloaded games. And I made a spreadsheet that documented every single preloaded game for every single Docomo phone. You can probably link to that somewhere. But those preloaded games, they don't require a SIM card to play, which means that you can just get a phone with no SIM card and you can boot up, like, for example, Dirge of Cerberus Lost Episode. That doesn't require anything. Or like Katamari Damacy Mobile. Doesn't require anything. But other ones, like let's say like someone wants to get Before Crisis. Unfortunately, that is an AU game, and all of theirs, their Brew pre-installed games, they require a SIM card in order to play the demo. So therefore, the Before Crisis demo is extremely hard to come by compared to just some Docomo demos. Luckily, Naya was able to find two of them, I think, right?
Yeah,
and basically to get any of these phones with the games, we recommend you go on Yahoo Auctions, Mercari, and these people are selling some of these phones for pretty cheap, like about $10, because they probably don't see the true value of the games, right? Like, they don't think there are Westerners like us look at it, you know, but yeah, pretty cheap, and you can use something like Mercari, Baiyi to like a proxy to get them here, and that's how we were end up with these games. But unfortunately, if you want to play a game that was on a SoftBank ecosystem, those do require 3G service, so unfortunately you're out of luck with those. But if you want to have like one of those demos in your hand, like, yeah, by all means look at the Docomo ones, because there are some very good games on there, including like the Devil May Cry game and Lost Planet, those Capcom games, those freeloaded games. They're actually not demos. They are full games on there. Like, I recently got a Devil May Cry game, and they got like multiple playable characters, billions of levels, a challenge mode, upgradable weapons. And I'm surprised.
So it's not a port. It's an actual tailor-made game for the feature phone.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's surprising, because usually all of these preloaded games, they are just demos. But there are some few ones that are like full games. And yeah, surprisingly easy to do it. If I can do it, then anybody else can do it, because I was totally new to this a few months ago, and I felt like weird because there is unfortunately a luck element, because it's entirely possible that you spend $30, you know, plus shipping on a phone, and then it comes to you, and then there's like, oh, no game on there. So unfortunately there is luck. But out of the out of all the ones I've bought so far, like only about 25% of them, only two phones had no games on there. So, you know,
real life gotcha.
Maybe there's a real life gotcha. Oh no. Yeah, real life gotcha. That sucks. But yeah, so those are demos though, basically.
So let's talk a bit about like what we can all do to help with this. I'm assuming you guys have a Discord and stuff like that to gather. But what else can just ordinary schlubs like myself do?
I'd say the number one thing that anyone can do, no matter who they are, is just basically spreading the word about these games. Talk about it, share it. The more people that know about it, the more likely it is that we're going to find some more technically skilled people who can assist this feature phone preservation community, because the community is small and they have an incredible amount of really, really talented and knowledgeable people. But we don't want to rely on these same people forever. I mean, after all, they're just one person with real life lives, you know, like,
of course,
it's a big burden on them. So if there is one thing that people have to do, it is spreading the word, because Yeah, I didn't see a lot of talk about these games, especially when the IMUG website shut down. No one covered it. There's no statement by the VGHF. There was like no website saying thousands of games were lost to time. You know, they used to because this was so niche and contained inside Japan, it's only logical that it might get overlooked. And that's definitely something that we would like to, you know, reverse, because as you can see, as we've talked about, there's so many different crazy types of games here. They're definitely worth talking about. They're more than just Snake.
Yeah, no, so, for sure.
So yeah, so that's the number one thing that they can do. And if you don't like have a ton of technical experience with chips and things like that, you can actually help find freeware. And that involves just like basically finding websites that had portals to these kinds of Java games. Not all of them are preserved in archive.org, so some of them are up and yet to be discovered. Yeah. And some of the sites might have Java files inside them and use inspect element, Python scripts. So there's a really ton of a lot of technical specifics here, but I did write a blog post on Game Preservation Collective named HitSave. And I plan on updating my post with information on how to find freeware. So probably when this podcast goes live, I'll have updated that. So if you're interested in doing that, feel free to check that out.
Yeah, for sure. I think having you on this podcast, I'm not going to toot my own horn or anything, but like this will really help your reach, I think, and I hope. And I hope if you are out there and you have any sort of interest in this, which you should, and especially any kind of technical know-how that can help out, like I will have information and links and stuff going on in the blog post. So please click on those and please help us preserve this very easily lost piece of game media. Like it's kind of like on the precipice. You guys are really heroes because you are pulling it back bit by bit. Not everything is going to be saved, but a lot of important stuff is going to be saved. And that's what matters in the end, I think. Is it for this bleepily bloopin' episode of Retronauts. I trust we've all learned a few things. I've really had a great time with this, and I've learned a lot. And I knew a little bit about feature phone preservation. I've known it was important, but we really kind of got down to the nitty-gritty here and talked a lot about why it's worth preserving as much as basically any game, and how much more delicate the situation is and how easily it can all be lost. And this is actually a good warning for all of game preservation these days, because everything's digital, everything's coming and going, especially it'll just blink out in a span of a day. We've learned that through a lot of game companies in this year. They made a lot of service games because they thought, well, oh, when they started, COVID had started. So they thought, oh, well, everyone's flocking to this game and Final Fantasy 14 and just like play, play, play. So let's make a game just like that. And of course, by the time it came out, you know, everyone was kind of back to work, unfortunately. So these games are getting canceled now or shut down. And this is all very big stuff, especially in an age where you don't get physical game releases so much anymore. So, thank you so much for educating me and for educating all of us. I really appreciate that. And Naoya, where can we find you?
So I'm on Twitter and as well as Reddit and the live stream forum webpage. I'm also on Discord as well. So if you ever have any questions about preservation or anything that you want to do to help preserve games such as Before Crisis, Professor Layton, or any of these games, you're more than welcome to shoot a message, and I'm more than willing to help in any way possible.
Yeah, you've been a great guest, so thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
And Cosmo, why about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Rockman Cosmo. That's just Rockman Cosmo. I also have a website that's dedicated to like my other projects that involve with Rockman preservation, and that's just rockmancosmo.weebly.com. And yeah, my other contact info is also on that website. So if you do want to reach out, help get involved with this project, or just have any questions about feature phone gaming in general, just like Naya said, I'm more than willing to answer it because, yeah, as you can see, I love talking about this, and I love just spreading the word about it.
Spreading the good word, spreading the evangelizing. So if you think this episode is cool, we have a lot more content just like it. Go ahead and visit the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts to access for media that's admittedly it's not feature phone compatible, but maybe we can work on a Patreon tier. Support us at the $3 level to receive early access to weekly episodes. The $5 level, you will get episodes a week early, as well as 2 exclusive episodes a month. If you support us at the magic number 64, that gives you the opportunity to set the Retronauts topic once every 6 months. As of this recording, there are 2 more spots left, so go ahead and grab those. As for me, I am Nadia Oxford. I am the co-host of the Axe of the Blood God RPG podcast, and I am not doing this. We talk about RPGs old and new, Eastern and Western. Please support us at patreon.com/bloodgodpod and or follow me at Nadia Oxford on Twitter. I also do Charlene Dropout, which is under the Blood God umbrella. It's a Final Fantasy 14 podcast. Please check that out too if you are a fan of the number 14. Until then, thanks for listening. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much to our guests for educating us. And don't let your MIDI Sweet Child of Mine ringtone go off in class. Trust me, it will not end well. Your teacher will be so pissed. I'm speaking from experience.